You have questions, we have answers. This is Jane Miller.
And this is Ken Miller. Welcome to our show, all about real estate with Ken and Jane. Today, we have returning as our guest, AJ Kumar, a certified public accountant. AJ's with Sai CPA Services. AJ, welcome back to our show.
Thank you, Ken. Thank you, Jane. I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Yeah, so last week's show was quite informative and a very good recap of the some general tax principles. Again, it's meant as general guidance for any specific issues. Please consult with your accountant. And if you need a great accountant, please call AJ. Why don't you share your number with our listeners?
Absolutely. Thank you, Ken. My number is 908-380-6876. Again, the number is 908-380-6876.
Thank you. So this show, we're going to talk about the fun topic of 1031 exchanges. That's a very interesting and neat topic that the IRS has. So, AJ, in a nutshell, what is a 1031 exchange?
So 1031 is a section in IRS rule book, and it talks about exchanging the real estate property. The rule comes from the fact that if you have an investment property, you're selling it only to buy another investment property. You're not taking any money home. So the premise was, I'm not really selling it. I'm exchanging it. I'm not making any money out of it. Why should I be paying any taxes? And the government said, well, okay, we are okay with that. And that's how this 1031 exchange section was created. There are several rules around it, several restrictions around it. But the premise of the section is, you're not taking any money home. I'm just selling one property only to buy another property. I'm exchanging it.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, I'm putting more money into this next property. You cannot be taking any money. Let's say if you sell the property, first property, property A, $400,000, the next property must be more than $100,000. You cannot say, yeah, I'll invest $90,000 into the next property and, yes, I'll take $10,000 back. That wouldn't work.
Otherwise, you have a tax consequence on the 10,000, right? If you don't exchange the full value, or
you can't even use that.
You can't even use the
1031 exchange rule is broken.
Broken. So then the whole
1031 exchange is this situation does not qualify for 1031 exchange.
The premise behind it.
I'm not using anything for myself. I'm not selling it.
Right.
This is really not a sell, Mr. IRS. I'm just exchanging it.
Right.
I think it's almost like a deferred tax.
It's like I sell one home.
I didn't take any money back, and I bought one full, but still left over. I buy the second one. I have the full money.
It has to be an investment property.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Investment property.
Yeah, it has to be investment A to investment B, right, and it's very broad. It has to be real property, but as I understand it, it can be very, the IRS interprets it very broadly. In other words, I can sell a warehouse and exchange that. My replacement property can be a multifamily residential unit. If it's investment,
from your perspective, the way we see it, both properties are investment properties.
Yes, yeah. That's
both
correct.
Properties are physical real estate property. So, yes, from your perspective, from Ken's perspective, warehouse, shop, multifamily residence,
a parking garage,
it's an investment property. This has to be real estate investment. Long time ago,
the Starker that I was going to bring up, that was the case, right? There was a lawsuit. They sometimes refer to this as a Starker exchange because I guess there was a lawsuit back a long time ago where
it has a lot of history around.
History to it, yeah.
Other than the real estate, there was a time when 1035 exchange was allowed. So there was a section in rule book under 1035 where you could exchange your insurance policies. You have one insurance policy, wow, you could give it up to buy another insurance policy, and you don't have to pay any tax on the proceed. Meaning there was a section for intangible asset where you cannot feel and touch. Now, intangible assets have been removed. Now, you cannot do 1035 exchange anymore. Mm-hmm. But 1031 exchange, you can still do, and it's limited to real estate. So as long as you deal with the investment, the way the rule is used, especially for millionaires. And you have to understand that a lot of millionaires in this country are created by real estate only. You cannot have a W-2 job and hope to become a billionaire, millionaire ever in your life. That's not how it works. Yeah. So how is the wealth created? you never pay taxes if you do it right.
I was going to say the wealth is created by the college dropouts and no, really, because they're the smart. They're too smart to go to college. So like, look at the Bill Gates and the. The guys like the Jersey Mike guy, I think when he was 17, he started that store. He borrowed some money. And
They're exceptions. I would still advise everybody to go to school.
Unless you're a genius and then you don't.
Let's do the middle point. You at least get into school. If you go to school, you get bored. You think that's too easy. You give up. That's one thing. But just purely not study, want to be anywhere, and that's a problem. Yeah.
Even
right?
if you want to do business, finish your studies.
Finish your studies, get to college,
and then you can do whatever you want to do.
At least you have the education. Yeah.
But going back to 1031 exchange and going back to creating wealth and not paying taxes. Take an example. You buy a property for $100,000.
Mm-hmm.
After 5 years, you sell this property for $500,000. Only to buy another property. So you don't pay any taxes. The problem is, in the second property, in property B, your cost basis is $100,000.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
But you do not pay any taxes. You have property B that you just purchased for $500,000. After 5 years, you sell property B for $2 million and invest into another property for $2 million. Mm-hmm. Now you are sitting on a property for $2 million. Even though the cost basis is 100, but you did not pay any taxes.
Because it's deferred. It's all
deferred. You have an asset worth $2 million. After 10 years, you sell this $2 million property for $10 million. How much tax you pay? Zero, because you exchanged it again.
Okay, for property
D. Property
D.
Now you are sitting on a property which is $10 million. Mm-hmm. Your cost basis may have been $100,000 only, but how much tax you have paid so far?
Zero. Deferred.
Yeah. None. You have created a $10 million property. Now the problem is you're worried about taxes. That whenever you sell it, you have huge tax. Don't sell it. When you die, when you pass away, this property is inherited to the next generation. At what value?
I guess.
Value, fair market value at the time of death.
Wow.
So
that's pretty.
Take a step back.
This concept is referred as swap till you drop.
That's a millionaire secret.
Swap till you drop. Meaning, 1031 exchange is not something that you do once. You keep doing 1031 exchange from A to B, B to C, C to D.
You keep building the wealth.
And then you don't gift it. The problem is a lot of people don't understand the rule. A lot of millionaires are millionaires because they understood the loopholes in the system. They understood the rules.
Don't say it too loudly, otherwise the IRS is going to close that. They're going to close that loophole, right? I mean, that's a major loophole. I'm surprised.
Take a step back. The reason we created this rule, we know there is a loophole.
Yeah.
The IRS system has been around for 200 years. They're smarter than me and you together.
Right.
Why did they do it? When somebody dies, it's a sad situation.
Yeah.
The last thing you want is to give them hard time about taxes. Right now, the estate tax limit for a married filing joint couple is $27.2 million. So up to $27.2 million, you can pass to the next generation without worrying about the taxes.
Wow.
But wait a minute, for a married couple, but they're not going to die together necessarily. In other words, when the husband, I'm glad you asked.
So the rule is 13.61 per spouse.
Right.
But there is a file that you can do. There is a form which is called portability form, form 706. You can file that form with the IRS to take the unused limit from the dying spouse to the surviving spouse. So the surviving spouse has 13.6 from the person who died and 13.6 over here.
Of her own.
So there are certain rules around it that you can use up to $27.2 million. Of assets can be passed to the next generation at fair market value without any tax.
And that was enacted, I think, around 2016, 2017, during the first Trump administration, and it's set to expire December 31st, 2025.
Well, right.
But hopefully that's
how we believe it. And under the TCJA, under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act that was enacted in 2017, as you rightly said, in the first Trump administration, they increased these inheritance tax limits substantially, doubled it suddenly. And this is supposed to. This was expected to expire on December 31st, 2025. But now, since the Trump administration is coming back again, we are not expecting this limit to be going away. We are expecting this limit to be either increasing or staying forever. It's not supposed to expire. Meaning, it's very difficult for the government to give something and then take it back in the next administration. That does not go well. So we are expecting these limits to not go away or not change much.
Wow, Ken, you and I never have to worry about tax, yeah. Right?
Because it used to be much lower. Didn't it used to be like 5 million or something? Like
one point of time, it used to be half a million, 1 million. Oh. Uh-huh. So it was 5 million when it was increased to 10 million suddenly in 2017.
Mm-hmm. Ah.
So it has a lot of history around it. Everybody was worrying about creating a trust. Irrevocable trust, charitable remainders. Yeah. Everybody was thinking about trust at one point of time.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, since the limits have been so absurd high, people like me and you will never have to worry
about it. Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you hit the lottery or something.
Lottery, only a million or so.
So
that's why a lot of people are not thinking about trust. That the rule that we want people to understand, going back to 1031 exchange, if you play it right, if you keep doing the 1031 exchange on this property, then you have this property moving to the next generation through inheritance. You pass this property at the market value. So in theory, you created an asset for the next generation without paying any taxes. That's the rule here. That's what we want people to
assume at the fair market value. That's something interesting.
Absolutely.
Ken, let's buy more property.
Yeah,
that's, so that would be passed on to our
people ask us all the time, what can they do to make more money? And as much as people feel good about stocks going up and down, I always advise them to keep some real estate portfolio. Not only it's good for diversification, it's good to have something that's not going to go substantially lower in value, that you can feel and touch. That's there.
They are.
Nobody can steal it from
you. Not intangible like some of the cryptocurrencies, which are a whole other topic.
I mean,
but
I'm not saying don't do that.
Do that, but
please consider the diversification.
Diversification is the key.
Now let's go back to 1031 exchange. There are some rules that we want people to understand.
Well, why don't we take a short break and we'll be right back.
Prime office space on Route 18 is available for lease. This versatile layout features private offices, conference rooms, and workstations with options to lease from 500 square feet to 2,800 square feet. Ideal for lawyers, accountants, and any professional service provider. Convenience extends beyond the premises with quick and direct access to major highways, including the New Jersey Turnpike, Route 1 and Route 130. To find out more, contact Ken at 732-322-2908. Seize the opportunity to lease a spacious building with private parking located in bustling downtown Jamesburg, Zone Commercial Business District, or CBD. This permitted use includes retail, office, medical, restaurant, hotels, and personal service establishments, and much more. To find out more, call Ken at 732-322-2908. That's 732-322-2908.
You've got the questions. They've got the answers. It's All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane Muller. Now let's get back out to our hosts, Ken and Jane.
Okay, welcome back to our show. We're joined with AJ Kumar, a certified public accountant with CSI CPA Services. And AJ, please once again give your phone number because I'm sure a lot of people will want to speak to you.
Thank you, Ken. My phone number is 908-380-6876. Again, 908-380-6876.
Thank you. Yeah. So let's continue our discussion on 1031 exchanges. And I have a question for you. This is more like a theory question. Do you think that the 1031 exchanges were created by the IRS to help stimulate, encourage investments, to, you know, as a way to say we're going to give you a little loophole because we want to encourage people to invest in properties and, you know, further stimulate the economy?
I think so. I mean, there must have been a lot of other reasons, but I believe it does help stimulating the economy. When you are sitting on a large gain and you are forced to invest this money within certain time, the money comes back in the market.
Yes. That makes sense.
It does help.
Yeah, so maybe their IRS, like you said, is smarter than all of us put together.
Of course.
So they know what they're doing within the macro scheme of things with the economics. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So let's break down the 1031 exchange a little bit further, and let's talk about the identification period, the replacement period, this mystery entity or person called the qualified, the QI.
Absolutely. Qualified.
Intermediary.
Absolutely. So the process is you identify the property that you want to buy. Then you identify the QI, qualified intermediary. And let's define what we mean by QI, qualified intermediary. So the rule is you cannot touch the money.
Yeah.
Right.
If the money comes into your account from selling the first property, the deal is off. Then 1031 exchange is not applicable to you. So the money must remain into somebody's account.
Right. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but as I understand it, it must go directly into that person's account, because I was reading there was a case, a challenge where the investor had received the check payable to them. They were in physical possession of the check. They never cashed it or never put it in the bank. But by virtue of the fact that they physically held the check that was payable to them for the proceeds, they were deemed in constructive receipt of the proceeds, and the IRS voided any 1031 exchange.
100%. That's exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
That's why you need QI. That's why you need qualified intermediary. The money cannot come to your account.
Nor even a check. You can't physically even hold
that
check.
The money has to stay in qualified intermediary's account.
Right.
So you need somebody. And it could be your attorney, the real estate attorney who is closing the first deal and helping you buy in the next property. The attorney could be the qualified intermediary, or a bank could be qualified, or 1031 exchange company. There are companies who will create the documents for you, the exchange documents for you. There are three documents. Very simplistic process, very, very cheap process, not expensive. They can act as qualified intermediary. The concept is, the idea is, there has to be intermediary, somebody in between the two transactions who is holding the money. You cannot hold the money yourself. Exactly. I'm agreeing with that case.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah. And let's talk about now the identification period. You have the 45
Absolutely.
Days to, I guess, identify a replacement property, right?
And a lot of people see that there are 45 days. Yeah. What a lot of people don't know, that you can identify more than one property, meaning you don't have to be sticking to one property and then creating a situation. I thought I'll buy this, but now I couldn't buy this, or something happened.
Right.
So in 45 days, you can say, I have identified seven properties, five properties, this. I'm going to buy one of them.
And is it a good idea, AJ, for the person to identify more than one? Because for that same reason, if that one deal...
Absolutely. Absolutely. I always advise people to have a backup plan, because especially depending on the gain. I mean, if your taxable gain is 50,000, then you don't have to have a backup plan. I mean, in the worst case scenario, you are paying maximum 20% long-term capital gains. And I'm saying the worst case scenario. It's not the end of the world, but if you have $1 million of long-term capital gain, you better plan it right.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you can create a situation where you don't know what to do. Now you are out of the window.
Yeah. Is there something that's called a Delaware statutory trust that could be viewed as a fail-safe? In other words, I was learning about that. There's this trust that if worse comes to worse, if you designate a Delaware statutory trust as one of your properties, then there's a way for the investor to put their money into that, and then that would constitute qualifying as a 1031 exchange.
That will qualify as intermediary, qualified intermediary. But you can't really put the money into a trust and not invest the money within 6 months.
But if the trust invested in terms of
into the real estate.
For you, that's, yeah.
The problem with the concept is, if you're investing money into REITs, real estate investment trust they call
right.
it. They call it REITs.
Right.
So the REIT invest into multiple properties. The concept behind the REIT is, there are companies, there are funds that are created. They will not invest into one property. They will invest into 500 different properties. So you buy 0.1% share of each property. By selling one property, if you're selling a physical property, one property in New Jersey, to buy REITs, real estate investment trust, then your risk portfolio is changing. Then it's not the similar asset that you're buying.
Right. It's not really real property. It's really
not
an interest.
The real property.
It's a share, which
so
is
if
not...
You, so if you are creating a trust only to invest this money into a physical real estate, we don't mind. We don't care. As long as the ownership does not change. Let's take another example here. They say, my wife owns the property, an investment property, and we are trying to do the 1031 exchange, and now that we created a 1031, the next property is owned by me. Mm. Does it qualify for 1031 exchange?
Would it qualify? No, it can't be.
Because the ownership is changing.
Change, yeah.
The ownership has to remain the same.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So from that perspective, if you have a trust, whatever, Delaware-based trust, mm-hmm. you have to make sure the ownership remains same.
Same, yeah.
The ownership is not changing.
And you How about if it's based on what you said, you know, if the property in my name, okay, and next property, because this one I made, I sold for $500,000, okay? And next one is $1 million. So I have to borrow some money to invest more. And obviously, my own income can't get that high. So the property B is in joint name, my husband and me.
As long as your share is worth more than the property that you are selling.
Okay.
Good example. Let's take the example. Mm. You bought the property for 100, sold it for 500, and you want to do the 1031 exchange.
Yep.
The next property is 1.5 million.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You don't have 1.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
You have 250. Mm-hmm. So you call somebody, your friend, hey, I'm buying this property. You want to come in at 50%? You have 750. You bring in 750. I bring in 500
plus 250. Plus 250.
This is okay. Mm-hmm. You are buying half of this physical asset.
Okay.
But your share has to be worth in the property that you're buying
more than the property that you sold for.
Yeah. More than you sold for, right?
Yeah. You cannot take any money home.
So in this example, you're putting in 750, which is
you're putting
more
in 250
than
more.
250 more than the 500
than million
that you sold. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, what about the location of where the real property exchange can occur? Can she sell investment property A in New Jersey and go to Australia and use that
not
for
foreign
B?
Country.
No.
So if you can, always go from New Jersey to Florida to North Carolina, as long as it's a
or Alaska or some.
As long as we see it,
it has to be the United States, right? You can't go even from New Jersey to Ontario, Canada.
You never know if they become the 51st state.
I'm married, but I'm just saying. Yeah.
Only joking. I'm not offending. Hopefully, I didn't find anybody there.
That's right. So it has to be. It has to be in the United States. Yeah. So Hawaii counts too.
And we want to remind our listeners that the closing of the next property must happen in 180 days. You have 6 months. Mm-hmm. To close the property.
And that's it's 180 calendar days, and that clock starts ticking from the date of the sale,
closing on the property A
that you relinquish.
So the exchange period, exchange means I give you something to take something.
Take something, right.
Yeah. So the difference, the timeline when I give you something, meaning I sell you something, to take something, it cannot be more than...
And I understand it that the IRS is very strict on that deadline, barring extenuating circumstances, which might be if the replacement property was located, like let's say in a federally claimed disaster area, or a hurricane went through it. There has to be something has to be almost declared a national emergency for the IRS to give you more leniency on that.
The rules are extremely strict,
right?
The strictness is more about avoiding the misuse. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people were doing that. I'm buying the property in 6 months. Mm-hmm. I sold the property for $500,000. Can I use this money, $500,000, for 6 months? Mm-hmm. Meaning you bought a property for $100,000, sold it for $500,000. Now you have 6 months to buy another property.
Mm-hmm.
But can you use this $500,000 into your business for the 6 months? That's not allowed.
But no, because it has to be tied up with qualified intermediaries.
So that's where the misuse was happening. That's where the rules were made to sort of say these rules are strict. You cannot play with it when it comes to using the money. And that's why the qualified intermediary is an extremely important concept here.
So when your money held by either your attorney or the third party can do the exchange, they cannot invest that money on your behalf.
They should not.
I'm just saying. They're
taking the risk on your behalf. They should be putting this money into an interest-bearing account so they can... The money can earn
some
interest.
But they may have an interest on that account.
And that's fine.
Yeah,
that's not okay. Invested.
Why would they?
Why should they? If they invest the money and if the money goes down.
By law, they probably can invest.
Right.
Because there would be a risk.
They're on the hook. If they're investing, they're taking personal risk.
Yes.
Right.
That's right.
on the escrow account, they should not be doing
this. They're a fiduciary. Otherwise, right, they're exactly. held to a higher standard. They, just like an attorney trust account, you cannot do anything with that money. It's set aside for that particular real estate transaction.
That's right.
So that's right. They have to be they're held to a high standard. So any tax implication, any circumstances where under a 1031 exchange, you could still be have tax consequences on the exchange.
Well, if the exchange does not go through, if the exchange falls through because you did not maintain the timeline, you did not have the right qualified intermediary, you did not identify the property, then you are on the hook to pay estimated taxes.
On the gain,
taxes on the gain.
Gain for the sale of property.
Absolutely. I have a question. Please, say, for example, 180 days, right? From just happened, identify the property. I did what I could. As a buyer. But unfortunately, some cloud title on that side or just some reason is out of my control. So I couldn't close within that time.
We don't care. I mean, if we start caring about it, we'll have a long story from every third person. So the rules are extremely strict. As Ken, you said rightly, unless it's a federal emergency, it's a disaster area, unless we know this is everybody. Otherwise, think about a situation. Then everybody has a three-page letter explaining their situation, why they could not do it, and why they should be given the relief.
Here's a question for you as we wrap this up, Jane. If you represent somebody doing a 1031 exchange and they're looking at replacement property B, is it a good idea if you're their agent representing the buyer of the new property doing an exchange? Is it a good idea to let the seller know who's holding property B that you're subject to a 1031 exchange? At what point is it in the negotiation process? Is it a good idea?
You know what? Yes or no.
If you tell them
the price-wise, you're going to pay
the upper hand, right.
So you don't tell them, later on, everything delays. So
usually it should be in the contract at that point, but they said if you represent the buyer, it's usually not a good idea until you put it in the contract, because otherwise you lose your negotiation power because they feel they've got the upper hand because they know the seller knows you're under a time crunch to get that.
You know what? Sometimes it's really right. I personally my client, I represent a lot of clients do exchange. So recently there was they did the exchange. We knew they do exchange. So obviously they pay the market price, I would say. And a home inspection, the buyer become extremely picky. And whatever we agreed on, and then they turn, because I knew they're going to do an exchange, so I thought they're going to be reasonable. Okay. Mm-hmm. At the end, it wasn't like a seller. They were just purely not reasonable. Mm-hmm. So at the end, the deal didn't work out. So that was really, obviously, to my surprise, because I thought, they would go through it because, as you said, they could lose exchange.
Yeah,
but once again, sometimes, they probably,
They need backup properties like AJ mentioned, because for that very circumstance,
But when you are representing the seller, is it a good idea to say, you know what, I can help you buy another property so you can avoid the capital gain taxes? So you have two deals coming together for you?
A lot of time, right? I mean, most of my clients, they do it either out of state. And we do help a lot of seller buying a nest exchange. We represent a lot of buyers. But I always tell them, don't start looking yet. We have to finish the home inspection first. Make sure the deal is solid. But you have to start research where you want to be and have a look. You said, plan B, plan C, plan D. We always make sure because, Ken and I were very, very conservative. We want to make sure of that.
So this was a great discussion, guys. I'm sorry we have to cut it short, but we're out of time. And I want to give you an opportunity once again to please share your phone number so people can reach out to you as a great accountant for all their tax issues.
Thank you, Ken. My phone number is 908-380-6876. Again, it's 908-380-6876. Thank you.
Now is tax return season. So please call if you need that.
Call AJ for any help you need. Thank you so much, AJ, for your time and expertise. We really appreciate it. We'll see everyone next week. Have a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You have been listening to All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane Mueller every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Fox Sports Radio New Jersey and Fox Sports Jersey Shore. For feedback and suggestions, go to their Facebook page, All About Real Estate with Ken and Jane, or email them at realestatewithkenandjane.com, or give them a call at 732 732-
732-222-2908. That's 732-322-2908.